Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Imagine losing the ability to recognize faces, maybe read a book, or even drive. Not, you know, all at once, but slowly, steadily, as your central vision just blurs and fades away. This isn't some far-off scenario. It's, unfortunately, the reality for millions of people as they get older. They're battling a condition where, well, the most common form is still stubbornly untreatable. We're talking about age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. It's a huge cause of irreversible blindness, affecting maybe 1 in 5 people over 90 in Western countries. Now, there are some pretty good treatments for the less common wet form of AMD, but the much, much more common dry AMD, you know, the kind with drusen buildup and photoreceptor cells dying off, that's left a massive gap, a real unmet medical need. But what if the key to preventing, or maybe even treating, this wasn't about adding something new, but actually about taking something away? A really groundbreaking deep dive into our own genes has pointed towards just such an unexpected and honestly pretty promising path. And the team that sort of cracked this genetic puzzle, giving us this really surprising answer, was this huge international collaboration. So today, we really want to celebrate the significant work of Mary Pett Reeves, Stephanie Loomis, and just a large team from places like the Institute for Molecular Medicine Finland, Mass General Hospital, the Broad Institute, Biogen Inc., and many others. They've collectively pushed our understanding of AMD forward right down to the fundamental genetic and functional level.
Yeah, absolutely. So AMD, at its core, it's this slow, progressive loss of your central vision. It happens because cells in the retina start to die off, specifically the retinal pigment epithelium, the RPE, and the photoreceptor cells themselves. And like you said, they're the two main types, wet and dry. Wet AMD, it's serious, yes, often involves abnormal blood vessel growth, but we do have treatments that work quite well. But dry AMD, that's the vast majority of cases. It progresses with what's called macular atrophy and the slow buildup of these deposits under the retina called drusen. Now, what's really crucial to grasp about AMD is its strong genetic component. I mean, large studies, GWA studies, have shown that up to maybe 71% of someone's susceptibility to AMD is actually heritable.
71%.
Yeah, it's huge. And get this. A single region on our chromosomes, right around the complement factor, H gene CFH, that accounts for nearly a quarter of all that genetic risk.
Okay, so that CFH gene region is clearly a major player.
A massive player. And that brings us right to the complement system. Now, many listeners will know, this is a key part of our innate immune defense. Its job is to clear out pathogens, cellular junk, things like that. But in AMD, the problem is its overactivation, or maybe just dysregulation. It gets out of balance and starts contributing to the damage in the retinal tissue.
So it's a system that's normally helpful but can go rogue in this disease.
Precisely. It's a really delicate balance. You need it to clear debris early on, but if it goes into overdrive, it becomes detrimental. And within the system, you have factor H, or FH. That's the protein made by the CFH gene. FH acts like a brake. You know, it inhibits complement activation, keeps it under control. But then there are these other genes right next door, CFH-related genes 1 through 5, or CFHR 1 to 5. They make these FHR proteins. And it's thought that these FHR proteins, especially FHR 5, actually compete with factor H.
Compete? How so?
They sort of counteract its effect. They reduce factor H's braking power, which could allow the complement system to become more active, potentially driving that harmful inflammation in the retina. It's this really complex interplay in that CFH region that's made it so hard to figure out.
Right. It sounds like a real genetic knot.
Yeah.
So how did these researchers actually manage to untangle it, figure out what's really going on with CFHR5 specifically?
Well, exactly. The CFH region, it was actually one of the very first disease spots found by GWAS way back in 2005. And since then, it's only gotten more complicated with more variants and structural changes linked to AMD. People suspected CFHR5 might be involved, but pinning down its specific independent contributions separate from everything else happening at CFH, that's been the challenge. Until now.
Okay, so that leads us to their methods. They used FinnGen, right? This large biobank in Finland. Tell us a bit about how they leveraged that resource.
Yes, FinnGen was key. Finland's population history involved what are called genetic bottlenecks. This means there's generally less genetic variation, or rather less haplotype complexity compared to more mixed populations.
Ah, So that reduction in complexity makes it easier to find the signal, the important variants.
Exactly. It cuts down the genetic noise. And with over 12,000 AMD cases and, you know, hundreds of thousands of controls, FinnGen gave them the sheer statistical power needed to see these effects clearly.
So a powerful cohort. What techniques did they actually apply to it?
They used a really sophisticated toolkit, advanced computational methods like association testing, statistical fine mapping, conditional analyses, basically very smart statistical approaches designed to tease apart those overlapping genetic signals in the complex CFH region and isolate the independent effects of specific variants.
Okay, so they crunched the genetic data, but they didn't just stop there, did they? They wanted to see the real-world effects.
No, absolutely not. They did this really clever sample recall study. They went back into FinnGen and selected serum samples, blood samples, from 200 dry AMD patients and 200 controls. And they were very careful to match these people based on age, sex, and crucially, their genetic status for key variants in CFH and CFHR5.
And what did they do with those samples?
That's where the proteomics came in. Using technologies like SomaScan and Olink, which can measure thousands of proteins at once, they quantified the levels of over 6,600 different proteins circulating in the blood, including, of course, factor H and all the FHR proteins, FHR 1 through 5.
So they could directly link a specific genetic variant to the actual amount of protein someone had.
Precisely. Does the gene variant actually change the protein level? That was a key question.
And did they look at function, too, not just levels?
They did. They moved on to functional validation using complement activation assays. They basically tested how well the complement system pathways, the classical, alternative, and MBL lectin pathways, could be activated in these individual samples. This allowed them to see if the genetic changes and the resulting protein level changes actually impacted how this crucial immune system pathway worked.
Wow. Okay, genetics, proteins, function. Anything else?
One more crucial layer. They connected it all back to the eye itself using optical coherence tomography, OCT imaging. They used data from another large resource, the UK Biobank, to look at the thickness of the retinal photoreceptor layers in people carrying these key genetic variants.
So they could actually see if the genetics was linked to a physical difference in the structure of the retina.
That's exactly right. It links the genetic finding directly to eye structure, providing a really clear visual endpoint. It was this incredibly integrated, multi-layered approach. Really impressive.
Okay, so a very thorough investigation. What were the big results? What did they find?
Well, this comprehensive approach paid off. They confirmed there are four major CFH haplotypes combinations of variants that protect against AMD. But the really exciting part was digging deeper. They found that two of these protective haplotypes were strongly linked to specific rare variants in the CFHR5 gene, particularly a frameshift variant enriched in FINs, which they called CFHR5s, and also a missense variant. This was the breakthrough directly linking protection to CFHR5 itself.
So CFHR5 steps out of the shadow of CFH. And what about the protein levels? Do those variants affect FHR5 protein?
Dramatically. Carriers of these protective CFHR5 variants showed what's called a dose-dependent reduction in their serum FHR5 levels.
Dose-dependent meaning?
Meaning if you had one copy of the protective variant, your FHR5 levels were lower. If you had two copies, they were even lower. And incredibly, in people who were homozygous for that frameshift variant, CFHR5's two copies FHR5 protein was undetectable in their blood.
Undetectable. Wow.
Undetectable. And interestingly, they also saw lower levels of FHR2 and FHR4 in these individuals, suggesting maybe a broader effect on these related proteins.
Okay, so list FHR5 protein. Now, you said FHR5 might compete with factor H, sort of taking the brakes off complement.
Yeah.
So less FHR5 should mean more braking, less complement activation.
That's what you might intuitively think, right? But here's where it got really fascinating and maybe a bit counterintuitive. They found that this genetic reduction in FHR5 actually correlated with a higher capacity to activate the classical and alternative complement pathway.
A higher activation. But isn't overactivation the problem in AMD?
Exactly. It seems paradoxical at first. But the thinking is, perhaps with less FHR5 around interfering, the main inhibitor, factor H, works fine, but the system overall becomes more efficient at its beneficial job, clearing out that retinal debris before it triggers the really damaging chronic inflammation. It's like removing a specific bottleneck that was hindering a useful process.
Ah, okay. So it's like boosting the good kind of complement activity, the cleanup crew function.
That seems to be the implication, yes. A more efficient clearance mechanism early on.
And did this translate to physical changes in the eye, like you mentioned with the OCT scans?
It did. When they analyzed the retinal imaging data from the UK Biobank, people carrying these protective CFHR5 variants actually had a thicker retinal photoreceptor layer.
Thicker? That sounds protective.
It is. That morphology, having a thicker layer of those crucial light-sensing cells, is directly associated with protection from AMD. It suggests these variants help maintain a healthier, more robust retinal structure over a person's lifetime.
Were they absolutely sure this effect was just from CFHR5? And not tangled up with other known protective factors in that region?
They went to great lengths to check that. They did careful conditional analyses. The protective effects of these CFHR5 variants were shown to be truly independent of other known variations at the CFH locus itself. This includes things like the large deletions in CFHR1 and CFHR3, or CFHR1 and CFH4, which have been debated a lot. In this Finnish population, those deletions didn't seem to have a substantial independent protective effect. The deep dive found no other hidden genetic variants driving this. It really pointed squarely at CFHR5.
Okay, that's very convincing. And what about safety? If lowering AKHR5 is protective, could targeting it cause problems elsewhere in the body?
That's always the critical question for potential drug targets. They performed a phenom-wide association study, or PHEWAS in Finnegan. They basically scanned across 2,404 other health conditions and traits to see if the CFHR5S variant was associated with anything else, good or bad. And they found no significant associations. Nothing popped up. This lack of obvious adverse effects is really encouraging. It suggests that targeting FHR5 might be a potentially safe therapeutic strategy without major unintended consequences elsewhere.
So this incredible detective work yielded some truly eye-opening results.
Yeah.
Let's unpack this a bit. What does this all mean for how we understand AMD and, maybe more importantly, for potential treatments? This feels like a big shift.
It really does. I mean, the clearest implication is that therapeutically downregulating FHR5 looks like a very promising strategy, either to prevent AMD in high-risk individuals or perhaps even treat it. It firmly establishes CFHR5 as an independent, important player in AMD risk. And it suggests a different kind of therapeutic approach instead of broadly blocking complement. Maybe we just need to reduce this one specific protein, FHR5, that seems to be hindering the system's protective functions.
Right. So it's not about shutting the whole system down, which we know we need for immunity, but more like fine-tuning it, removing a specific impediment to let it work better in the eye.
Exactly that. It reinforces this idea of the complement system's delicate balance. You know, early on, it's good for clearing debris, but if it gets out of control, it drives disease. Lowering FHR5 seems to tip the balance back towards that beneficial debris clearance without letting it run wild into damaging inflammation. It's optimization, not elimination.
And the way they untangled this using Finnegan that must have implications for studying other complex diseases too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fantastic demonstration of the power of these large, well-phenotyped biobanks, especially those from populations with reduced genetic complexity like FINS. It shows how invaluable they are for dissecting these really challenging genetic regions. It provides a kind of roadmap for tackling other complex genetic puzzles. And another really interesting finding was the additive protection. They saw that people who were lucky enough to carry protective variants in both CFH and CFHR5 had even stronger protection against AMD.
So the benefits stack up.
It seems so. The combination offers enhanced defense. This could be really important down the line for, you know, identifying people at highest risk, or maybe even designing therapies that target multiple points in the pathway for greater effect.
And you mentioned CFHR5 looks like an attractive drug target because lowering it doesn't seem to cause other problems. That's huge for drug development, isn't it?
It's critical. Identifying it as an allelic series gene where different variants naturally lead to different levels of the protein, including complete absence without apparent harm, that's very encouraging. The lack of obvious safety signals in that PHEWAS makes it a really compelling target. And it's different from some current AMD approaches that try to broadly inhibit complement. Here, the idea is to just reduce the amount of this one protein, FHR5. It's a more subtle approach, potentially with fewer side effects.
So where does the research go next? What are the immediate next steps, scientifically or maybe even clinically?
Well, there's still a need to nail down the precise molecular details. How exactly does lowering FHR5 boost the good complement activity and protect the retina? More research is needed there. But looking ahead, this definitely opens the door to developing novel therapies. Things like neutralizing antibodies designed to bind and block FHR5, or perhaps oligonucleotide therapies that reduce its production.
And how would those be delivered? Directly into the eye?
That's another fascinating angle. FHR5 is mainly made in the liver, not the eye. So there's this really intriguing possibility that a treatment could be given systemically, like an injection elsewhere in the body, rather than needing repeated injections directly into the eye, which is how many current wet AMD treatments work. That would be a huge advantage for patients.
That would be a game changer. Are there limitations to consider from this study?
Of course, like any study, the recall study, while focused, was still limited in size, so they couldn't analyze every rare genetic combination. And importantly, because this was primarily in the Finnish population, we need more studies to confirm these findings hold true in people of other ancestries. Genetics can vary. Also, we need more longitudinal data following people over time with retinal scans to really understand who would benefit most from lowering FHR5 and whether it's best for prevention or for treating established disease. But even with those caveats, the direction this points is extremely promising.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, for our listeners, and potentially for the millions affected by AMD? Well, this deep dive really shows that a specific genetic tweak, a loss of function in the CFHR5 gene, leading to less FHR5 protein, gives significant protection against age-related macular degeneration. It seems to work by letting the body's own complement system do a better job of cleaning up cellular debris in the eye and by helping maintain a healthier retina. It's a groundbreaking insight that points towards a completely new and potentially safer therapeutic path for AMD. So what does this mean for the future of eye care? And maybe how we think about precision medicine for preventing age-related diseases more broadly. It really makes you think.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.